It is 7:31, time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Beth Burrows. Beth Burrows is president and director of the Edmonds Institute, a nonprofit public interest organization committed to the health and sustainability of ecosystems and their inhabitants. Beth, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
If you would begin, tell us a bit about the Edmonds Institute.
The Edmonds Institute was founded a little over a decade ago to mostly to work on issues related to environment and technology. Our commitment to ecosystems, that sounds very environmental when it's put that way, but we also consider the human ecosystem, and so we have a very strong commitment to social justice and to democracy. We think they're an important part of human ecosystems, particularly in our own neighborhood here in the state of Washington and in the country of the United States. We have done a lot of work, and we're probably best known around the world for our work on biosafety, the impact of various technologies on living organisms and their habitats, their environment, their ecology, if you will. Among the things we concern ourselves with are the health of biodiversity, all of the critters, including human critters. And it was in that context that we began to notice some years ago that there are laws and events that happen that seem totally unrelated to those things that have enormous impact on the health of ecosystems and on how we think about them and how much we're willing to give up to sustain them, even for our own use. It was back in about 97, I think it was, when I got a phone call. I'm segueing here, Mike, into the topic I came to talk about. I got a phone call from a reporter, and I always start the story this way because I think this was one of those times when the press was really doing its job. I got a phone call from a reporter saying, "I understand you know something about patents, and that you're willing to sit and talk with me until I understand what the big deal is." And I said, "Sure, more than glad, as long as it'll take. I'm always glad to have an opportunity to educate someone, whatever it takes." We went on for about half an hour. And finally I said, "Can I ask a question? Why did you call me today and not last week? What changed in the world that led you to me?" And she began to tell me about a deal that was made in Yellowstone National Park, whereby a company would do some bioprospecting, some seeking after organisms of commercial interest, in exchange for a percentage of any profits to be returned to the park. And I said to her, "Hey, I need to get off the phone." And she said, "What do you mean you need to get off the phone? You said, as long as it takes." I said, "I'll call you back. I really will. I'll give you all the time you want. But until you told me what you just said, I didn't realize that I only had probably about 6 weeks in which to put together a case against the United States. In this case, against the United States Department of Interior, most specifically work in the national parks." And I called friends at an organization called the Center for Technology Assessment. They're lawyers in Washington, D.C., Joe Mendelson and Andy Kimbrell, and I said, "I think this is a really important event. I think it's because it seems so technical, because the focus of interest is probably microorganisms, and who cares about microorganisms? You know, it's not buffalo, it's not a whale, it's not a panda, it's not even a really exciting bird, it's just microorganisms. And because it sort of sounds good, I think it's going to slip by. But if we let this slip by, the people of the United States will be saying, whether they intended to say or not, that they wanted to go into business to deal over the organisms they have been given to steward. They will make their public lands the playground for private endeavor. And they will put the whole National Park Service in some way at risk. I said, now, it's a democracy, and if that's what people want to do, it won't make me happy, but I'll go along with it. But I think they ought to comment. People, we are the owners. Technically, we are the owners. These are our national lands. They are our national parks. And we do have a duty of care to the critters who live there. So I think they ought to inform the owners, don't you? And not do these kinds of deals behind closed doors, which was how the deal was done. Although the people who did it didn't feel they'd done it behind closed doors. They'd talked to their friends, but they hadn't made it cast a wide enough net so that the public knew. We first started with a petition asking them to cease and desist, that sort of thing. And to make a very long story short, because this has gone on for years now, after one legal event after another, we finally sued to stop the deal. At that point, there was an organization called Alliance for Wild Rockies, which is an association of organizations in the Rockies area, in the Yellowstone area. And we had other people interested in the deal as well. We took it to court. I'm making this sound like it happens quickly. Years passed in the interim. This was a learning experience for me, by the way. The Edmonds Institute was not founded to bring to do litigation. Had there been 6 months before the deal was going to be finalized and announced publicly, I might have contacted someone else and had them do all of this that we've spent all these years doing. But sometimes the ball is shot to you, and you've got to pitch it back, even if you're not the right pitcher, even if you're, you know, not in good practice. Sometimes it's just yours to do, and that's how we saw it. To make a long story short, a long time later, the court said yes, the deal should not go forward. They agreed with us that this was an extraordinary happening and an extraordinary change in national policy insofar as the parks were concerned. And extraordinary changes are required under NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, to have an environmental assessment, some kind of impact statement about how this will affect the park. And until that was done, they couldn't go on with the deal. A while later, in a second ruling, the court decided that they could make a deal. It was within their right to make a deal. And that they hadn't violated the public trust in doing so. That had been one of our arguments. But 7 years were to go by before they fulfilled the court's mandate to do an environmental impact statement. A little less than a month ago, they came out with a 340-page document called, they being the National Park Service. Remember, this is in response to a court, which was in response to a case that we were part of. They brought out a document called Benefit Sharing Draft Environmental Impact Statement, Service-Wide. It's 340 pages. And we have until December 15th to get all our comments in, at which point they will issue an environmental impact statement for the entire agreement. And they have construed the court's direction to be to see this as policy not just for Yellowstone and for the little deal that we were looking at, but for all of the national parks, which includes many, many millions of acres of wilderness and wild lands. So we're talking about a major national policy, and the reason I came here today, I do know Mike for some time, and I don't usually call him and say I'd like to go on your show, but the reason I wanted to this time, I think this is important. It's one of those kind of geeky sort of things, enviro-geeky, if you will, kind of things. you get a 340-page statement there. Very difficult to read. Very difficult to read. Even if you read just the executive summary, which runs 26 pages, you'll probably want to go out for a pizza immediately afterward and never go back. There are, you know, indexes, there are tables, there are lots of acronyms. It's boring. It's extremely boring. But embedded in that boredom is a giveaway of our national parks, is a giveaway of the whole idea of national parks. And if you care about national parks, and I don't mean to get sentimental about it, but if you think there's something in sharing a commons with each other, if you think there's some meaning to this bond we're supposed to have together as a nation, then you should be concerned about that document. And you should say, is this the way I want to proceed? And then if you open it and do as a few of my friends have done and start to read, you'll probably want to call me and say, what the heck is this about? I don't get this, because it's, you know, it seems to some places it seems pretty reasonable. Talking about sharing benefits from people who do research, well, what's wrong with that? And it's talking about, you know, it's they're going to be very careful, and it's not really a lot of the research. And it, well, no. Take a moment. Think about it. Why did it take 7 years to do that? And why was this document issued at an election time? We're in the midst of a war. Here's Beth Burroughs coming here talking about microorganisms when members of our own species are dying all over the place. Some would say for no good reason, or some would say for a lot of bad reasons. So why am I saying this? Because this is an erosion of the same kind of thing, an erosion of our relationship to it all, including the microorganisms, but especially places like Yellowstone, Grand Canyon. These are our commons. This is why we, many years ago, decided to go for it. We could see that people no longer understood the commons. We could see that a lot of what we were talking about when we tried to get people to do their civic duty, if you will, people didn't know what we were talking about. Here's something we hold dear together, really special places, so special that some of them were donated to us to keep in perpetuity for the future, in the condition in which they were given, a real mandate about being a member of a planet, a real mandate about shared responsibility as a member of a country, a real holding together to give something to the future that wasn't branded, that wasn't diminished by the fact that we had participated in it, something that would persist through time. No matter what happened to us, we would always be able to pass that on. And now we have this thing called a benefit-sharing draft environmental impact statement. And if we go the way the National Park Service is recommending in that, technically they're recommending one of the alternatives they themselves provide, we will allow commercial bioprospecting, private companies to go in and extract, develop, patent, and market products derived from the critters that we were given to steward. Now, there's a lot of things you could say about the fact that I'm here today. You could say, whoa, are you against business? Nope, that's the country we live in. But I think there's a separation between public and private. Whoa, are you against research, Mrs. Burroughs? I'm frequently asked that. I said, absolutely not. If you go and look at the website of the Edmonds Institute, you'll see there's a lot of pretty heavy-duty research on there, including heavy-duty scientific research. So no, we're not against it. But we think there are limits to certain kinds of things. And so I'm here today to say it's up to whoever's listening to comment on this darn 340-page thing. Now, I'd like you to go in the direction that I'm interested in going, and saying no commercial bioprospecting in the parks, which is called technically Alternative C. But I'll be just as happy if a million of you go out and comment, and I lose. I mean, I'll be miserable. Mike will probably have to, you know, pat me on the back and tell me it'll be okay. But it's more important that you exercise at least this bit of your duty to comment on how you would like your own national parks, your own national wildlands, your own commons, your own bond with your children's future in terms of land, how you would like that to be stewardess. If you can't do that, I have to wonder, you know, what we're doing, what you're doing, why I'm bothering. So technically what I'm asking you to do is to send in comments to the National Park Service before December 15th. Now, you're saying, well, lady, my life is pretty full. You know, I'm giving money all over. I'm working day and night on this cause and that. We foresaw, when I say we, I'm not in this alone. It's not only the Edmonds Institute. It's also other organizations, a wonderful organization called Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, an organization in Washington, D.C., but all across the country, made up of people who have worked for the national government, have worked in the national parks, again, Alliance for Wild Rockies, as well as a group called Wilderness Watch. Concerned, they're very concerned about violations of the Wilderness Act. All of us together have put up a website called www.parksnotforsale, parksnotforsale.org, parksnotforsale.org. You can go up there. You can read about the agreement. If you do have the time to read through it, we've made a direct link to a PDF file that you can download and read the 340 pages. If you don't have time, we give you some information there, and we also give you a very easy link to a site that will allow you to comment directly. It takes you to a site that has a letter that says, I'm for Alternative C, but if you're not for Alternative C, if you hate Alternative C, you can change it. It allows you to edit it. It allows you to fill in all of the data that is required by the National Park Service. It should take you no matter which alternative you want, and I will go through them in a moment. I'm sure Mike will ask me to. You can simply, with a couple minutes and a click, do your civic duty. It's even easier than voting because you don't even have to have a stamp. But again, I don't want to take away the privilege of reading the whole document. And again, if you don't agree with me, that's okay. But it's more important to me that you comment. Over all these years, as I have railed against the Park Service doing this, two things have bothered me. One, that it was done secretly. Two, that the deals didn't allow the public, the kind of deals they're advocating, CRADAs, do not allow, one side of the deal can always say, legally say, oh, this would be, would hurt our business if everyone knew what we were paying you to do this. So that part of the deal is confidential business information, and as such, cannot be shared with the general public. Now, I know some people are listening and saying, oh, that can't be the case. These are our national parks. This is civil service kind of stuff. It can't, this all has to be public. Oh, no. When we went to look at the deal that was done in Yellowstone, the whole thing that started this, the financial details, the financial nitty-gritty, we couldn't get. Got a little bit of it, but most of the two paragraphs that counted, the percentage, the exact percentages, we couldn't get. We were told it was confidential business information and that that was legal under CRADAs. These kind of deals are called Cooperative Research and Development Agreements. And for those of you who want to know how we found out what the deal actually was, the company that made the deal made a similar deal in Mexico. They were bragging to the Someone in Mexico was bragging to one of the lawyers in Mexico, saying, well, we'll show you the deal we gave the United States, and we're giving you a better deal. He made a photocopy of it and showed it to a friend who showed it to a friend who called me. And that's how the people of the United States found out what they sold the microorganisms in Yellowstone for. Wasn't through our courts. Our courts wouldn't allow it. Two reporters tried to get it. Members of Congress tried to get it. Couldn't get it. No, this is confidential business information, and it's the right of this company to keep it, and it's the responsibility, we were told, of the Park Service not to share it. The Park Service never shared that deal. That came to us in entirely other channels. We actually should thank the people of Mexico for allowing us to know what our people had sold our critters out for. This is the way it's going to be, folks. Although they give us three alternatives, A, B, and C, and B is one of the B versions they recommend, all of the B versions have to do with cooperative research and development agreements. So it doesn't make a bit of difference to me if they say absolute full disclosure, because under the law, either side to a cooperative research and development agreement can ask that part of that agreement be kept secret. So I'm glad that it's their intention to share, but they will be forced legally not to share. Who are we talking about? These are our public servants who will now be effectively working against the public interest, because the public can't find out its own interest in any situation where any part of the deal is kept secret. You can't even know if they've made a good deal. Indeed, when we brought the case many years ago, I had a call from a very angry man who lived in the Yellowstone area. He was looking at the potholes and the roads around Yellowstone, and he felt it was Beth Burrow's fault that they were going to continue. And we had a lot of arguments on the phone, and I finally said, "Sir, it's clear we don't agree on many things, but I think we would agree on this. These are very complicated deals. These are deals about royalties and percentages and things like that. These are deals when keeping track of costs is very important. And we would agree that one of the things the public would need to know to decide whether these were good deals or honest deals or deals that were kept would be all of the details of the deal. And if you can't even know the details for which your own property was sold, how will you know that it was a good deal? Do we really think that the ultimate wiliness in business wheeling and dealing resides in the Department of the Interior? I don't know. Maybe it does. But transparency is key, which is why anything that is done under cooperative research and development agreement is problematic, which is why I personally have to reject the parts of the deals that are called Alternative B. Alternative A would leave things as they are. And normally I'd say, okay, let's leave them as they are. But they gave us Alternative C, which is the only one that talks about restricting who can do bioprospecting in the parks. And Alternative C, in their benefit-sharing draft environmental impact statement, Alternative C disallows commercial bioprospecting. Disallows. So it makes there'd be no problems with deals. And I think that's where we should go. I don't think it's the business of the parks to be doing this kind of business. They argue in their environmental impact statement that this will restrict research. I say, well, but your own figures in that document say that this is less than 0.5%. And only under the most extraordinary of circumstances will it really amount to any money to speak of. Because after all, you're going to have to get people in the park to service these deals. They talk about the number of full-time employees that will have to be used to help in this research. When you do a rough cost-benefit analysis, if you believe in cost-benefit analysis, if you put aside the whole idea of the parks and the whole idea of the commons and the whole idea of national bonds related to land and critters, If you put all of that aside and say you're only going to judge in terms of percentages of return versus costs of park employees that are going to be involved working at it, it still doesn't come out to hardly anything. And mostly it comes out to nothing. So why do it? Why damage this wonderful idea that we had about national parks and about preserving something intact for the future? Why would we do that? I don't believe that it will impair research. I don't believe we will lose cures and solutions to problems. I believe if someone finds something in the park that's really interesting, they will find another way to commercialize it. It's okay with me. I don't want the park getting a kickback and calling it benefit sharing. If someone discovers a microorganism in the park and makes a lot of money off of it, unintentionally, this might happen in the case of a university researcher who found something, put it in some kind of data bank, and someone later found some other use for it. I don't get upset that the money didn't go back to the park. It still went back to the commons. That invention, whatever it was, will still serve the public. What I don't want is to engage the people who work in the parks, whose duty it is to preserve and to create an experience for people who visit. I don't want to make them corporate players. They're public servants. And that public includes the critters in the park as well. So I'm here again to ask you to go to www.parksnotforsale.org. Read the stuff there. If you want to, read the whole draft in my environmental impact statement. Look at the three alternatives. And then use the mechanism we've created, which says comment to comment, click here. And if you don't like what we've said, change it. But take a moment to do it. Take a moment to do it. Because someday if you go there and you find that Yellowstone has become a business park and not a national park, you'll at least be able to say to your kids or your grandkids, I wrote a letter against that. Yep, that was a terrible thing that happened. A lot of us fought it. At least you will have that commons left, your political commons left. So please take the time to do it. I'm sorry, Mike. I didn't mean to make a speech.
That's okay. That website again is parksnotforsale.org. In addition to that website, how can people find out more about the Edmonds Institute?
We have our own website, and indeed, if you want to go through the details of the various legal cases, you can find that at www.edmonds, edmonds-institute.org, and just look in the section on biodiversity, and then look right below it. There's a section why we pursued the case at Yellowstone.
And since numerous of our listeners actually don't have access to the web, do you guys have a phone number as well that people can call?
Yes. The phone number is 425-775-5383. And if you don't have access to the web, I can send you a printout of some of this stuff. Although I'm not sure we're geared up to send a million of them, but we're a pretty small organization, really almost as small as they get. But we will we'll do our darndest to get you whatever you need to know.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, so I want to thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
We have just been talking with Beth Burrows. She is president and director of the Edmonds Institute. And again, the two websites you can go to are parksnotforsale.org and the Edmonds Institute website itself, edmonds-institute.org.